6, the first baseman, number 35, Eric Hosmer. Hosmer getting a wonderful ovation from the Royal faithful. They remember him well. He was a big part of the Royals' success.
Well, if you are a Royals fan and you remember 14 and 15, how do you not have goosebumps when you hear that? That is the story from last night. Eric Hosmer back in KC. The ovation was warm and receptive and fantastic. Eric Hosmer, still close friends with Salvador Perez. That was really awesome when he came to the plate in the first inning. Yeah, the Royals won. I don't even care. I don't care, because the great thing about Eric Hosmer coming back to KC last night is it brought back all the memories of when the Royals were good just 7 years ago and won the World Series. And Eric Hosmer, of course, left in free agency after the 17 season. And he went to San Diego, got a lot of money, still getting a lot of money, and didn't perform up to the contract, although he had decent numbers in San Diego, but not the numbers that would match the contract. And we said at the time when the Padres picked up Eric Hosmer via free agency that they overpaid for him. We said the Royals should not give Eric Hosmer all that money. It was the right decision. At the same time, it was great to see him back at the K for the first time since he was last a Royal. It was the first time he's back in a different uniform. And in his first at-bat, six-pitch at-bat, worked it really well and off of Bubich and hit one deep to center. And he was out, so good for the Royals. But Eric Hosmer last night, 0-for-3 with a walk. The Royals win by a final of 7-3. More on that in a moment. But I want to focus on Hosmer, because Eric Hosmer, I was thinking back of the they did a great highlight reel, the Royals did, their social media team. It was awesome, about a two-minute thing. If you haven't seen it, you can follow me on Twitter. I retweeted it, NCKS Radio Guy 10. You know, and there's different things that stand out to me. Obviously, the first thing that I think of Eric Hosmer is I think of, obviously, his dash home from third when he and the Royals scouted David Wright and knew how he would throw the ball to first. And he scored and tied the game, and the Royals, of course, went on to win Game 5 and win the World Series. And that wasn't the smartest base-running move in the world if the first baseman, Lucas Duda, actually makes a good throw. But it was the element of surprise. And the Royals outfoxed the Mets in that game, in that situation, and Eric Hosmer is a huge part of that. The other best memory of Eric Hosmer for me were two memories that I was actually at the K to witness. The second one that I remember is when the Royals had blown the lead because Ned Yost put in Mattson to face Jose Bautista in Game 6 of ALCS against the Blue Jays. After rain delay, Wade Davis comes back, works out of a jam, and you're like, man, we got Yosted. In the very next half inning, Lorenzo Cain gets on, and Eric Hosmer. Everybody talks about Cain's run from first to home. Do you know who hit the single to score Cain? It was Eric Hosmer. Yeah. Eric Hosmer got the RBI on a guy at first in a base hit to right field. And so Hosmer had the game-winning RBI that decided that game and the series and didn't have to go to 7. The other one I remember is Hosmer in the wild card game when the Royals are down 8-7. That game went back and forth. That was the greatest sports event I've ever attended in my life. And I was at the very top of the stadium behind home plate with some friends of mine. And the Royals were down 7-3, and then they came and tied it. Then they're down 8-7, and it was Hosmer with the triple that nearly cleared the fence. Johnny Gomes, along with the center fielder for the A's, ran into each other. And Hosmer, just remembering his reaction over at third, was pretty amazing. He was fired up. And then another memory I remember of Hosmer just popped in my head was when Gordon hit the home run to tie Game 1 of the World Series, because Hosmer had made an error previously. And he was so relieved and so happy that Gordon hit a homer. Yeah, a little bit selfishly because, hey, I'm off the hook. But also, I mean, all the momentum. And Hosmer was no doubt the leader of that team. There, you can sit here and you can look back retrospectively and say, well, Salvi was the leader of the team. No, he wasn't. Eric Hosmer was the leader of the team. Eric Hosmer was a spokesperson. Eric Hosmer was the one that spoke up when Yordano Ventura was beating guys on the other team. And he did. He said the right things. He supported his teammate, but he also said a few things to you about, you know, he's young, we're working with him, this and that. So he never said Ventura is always right, but he didn't say necessarily he was wrong. But he really handled that very well. And Eric Hosmer was very, very good with the media in Kansas City. And that's another reason why players, when they leave and come back, or players that just at the end of their careers are thought fondly of, is if you've got a really good relationship with the media, it helps you. There's no question. And Eric Hosmer is highly respected and well thought of in Major League Baseball. Yeah, fans in San Diego can be bitter because he didn't live up to the contract, and I've seen all the lowlights of him defensively. He has not been as good defensively at first base in San Diego as was in KC. He did win a gold glove. And the other thing I remember about Eric Hosmer was, okay, so the Royals go to the World Series in 14, losing Game 7. 15, they win it all. And 16, he wins the All-Star Game MVP. So it was like that three-year run was just amazing. Like all the way up to the All-Star break, we had a Royal win the All-Star Game MVP. Eric Hosmer first home run was at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. Like he had a tendency to come through when, I mean, yeah, he rolled into lots of double plays. Yes, he did. Did he pull the ball a lot when he really could have gone the other way? Yes, absolutely agree with that too. Does he sometimes get a little fancy at first and get his body in front instead of the old lay and makes great plays? But always drives me nuts with fielders is if you can get your body in front, get your body in front. But Eric Hosmer was the leader of the 15 World Series team. It wasn't Salvi. It was Eric Hosmer. And last night, that just gave me the warm, fuzzy feeling of, oh, yeah, I do remember being there for these games. Or I remember watching on TV. Or I remember when the Royals got good again. I remember when Hosmer came up and Moustakas came up and then Kane and Escobar and how the Royals turned everything around. I remember that mad dash home where I'm like, what is he doing? Oh, my gosh. Oh, yes, he's safe. And I know we're going to win now. And I don't care that the Royals are 42-64 after last night's victory. I don't even care what happened in the game last night. For me as a Royals fan, this was medicine that I needed. And that was Eric Hosmer, who wasn't going to be at the Cave for a very long time, but got traded to the Red Sox. Boom, all of a sudden, Thursday night, you got these cheap tickets for a Royals game. You don't think anything crazy is going to happen. Oh, yeah, what? Hosmer got traded. Hosmer's going to be at KC for the first time since he was a Royal. Well, that worked out pretty well. And it was absolutely, the response was amazing last night, and it rightfully should have been.
Yeah, he was coming back on the 26th if it wouldn't have been last night because the Padres are coming to town on the
three
next
weeks,
home stand.
Weeks
so it's been a few
earlier.
More weeks, and he got there earlier, and I think it was, like you said, some medicine for some Royals fans and the fact that he got there a little bit earlier. And, you know, I was traveling back home, so I didn't get to see it live, but I saw the video on Twitter and things like that. And the picture that the Royals photo guy caught of Salvi with that big smile on his mm-hmm. face waiting for Haas. And so that, those are the things that always make you feel better about anything, no matter what might be going on with your team in a certain year when you get reunions like that. And the thing I love about every time any of these guys come back, and it's been so long for Hosmer because he played in the National League and the Padres never came, but you know, we've seen Lorenzo Cain come back, Mike Moustakas, those guys that came back, and that ovation that the fans give them, and I think that's always something that Kansas City fans have been good at, is recognizing how important those moments are too. And I know they feel good to you as you're a fan and have those memories pop into your mind, but I think it's always really interesting the way Kansas City baseball fans honor the people that they need to honor, and they've done a great job of that, and it always gives you goosebumps when you hear it and see it and see him come back. Yeah, the Hosmer, and then the thing I remember about Hosmer too is the sack fly he had to win that game after Gordon hit the home run, right?
Right.
And it was like the just the look of relief on his face when Gordon hit that home run after he had the error that allowed a run for the Mets. It was just like, oh, I'm off the hook for looking. And then he was able to be the hero after it was all said and done. And you know, it's a sack fly, but he was the one that drove in the winning run in game one and got the thing rolling for the Royals to be able to win the World Series.
Game one of that World Series, Chris Gordon's remember for the home run in the ninth, and people probably forget Hosmer hit the sack fly to the game winner. But another thing people forget is Chris Young locked down the Mets in extra innings, and the Royals eventually won the game, and we were leaving it in the morning, technically. And I remember the ushers going, "Good morning!" And we were looking at our watches like, "Oh, yeah! We're not even tired." And we drove all the way back, and I was on so much adrenaline. I mean, we were talking about the game all the way home, me and my buddies. It was just phenomenal. We could have stayed there and stayed up 24 hours straight. We were so psyched that the Royals not only made the playoffs, but then to come from behind like they did and to win it the way they did. In regards to the wild card game, that's what I'm referring to there. And of course, game one of the World Series was pretty crazy with me and my friends too, because that one almost didn't even happen. There was a rain delay, and we didn't think we maybe even going to play. And then, you know, the Mets closer, Familia, was like absolutely lights out. He's like unhittable. And then Gordon hits the homer after Hosmer made the error, because you're down because Hosmer made the error. Oh no. And then Gordon comes through, and then Young came through, and then Hosmer came through, and that was the motto was, you know, keep the line moving, and that's exactly what the Royals did. And but Hosmer, there is no mistake about it. Don't let revisionist history take over. Salvador, yes, was a great guy in the clubhouse, still is, and he's the leader of the team now, in my opinion, with Witt being gone, even though I think Salvi was already. But there's no doubt, even as Salvi, the leader of that clubhouse was Eric Hosmer. And, well, and you take away that leader, somebody else had to step up. So that was Salvador Perez, Moustakas. You know, they all had leadership qualities. That's what makes them so good. They had other leaders. But the spokesperson, the person you went to with any tough question, the first person you went to, and it wasn't like you have to go talk to Eric Hosmer. Everybody just knew. We go to Hosmer first.
And Hosmer, there's a different types of leadership, right?
Yeah.
Like you say, and Salvi's always been a leader for this team, but not in the same way that Hosmer was, right? So I was like, when Hosmer would make some big play or something, he'd always slap his arms and put the backpack on, right? Yeah. Like he's putting the team on his back. Right. Like he did that, though. He walked the walk. Yeah. You know, you can talk all you want and act like you're a leader for this team, but Hos was a guy that was going to be aggressive about it. Mm-hmm. And if something was going on, he was going to make sure that he was coming out in front of it for the Royals and making sure that you know, he was going to let everybody know on behalf of the team where they stood.
He took the pressure off his teammates.
He did, absolutely. Like, especially like guys like Moustakas, I feel like. Because I don't think Moose had that kind of that attack leadership mentality that Hosmer did. He wanted to be a leader for the team and wasn't in the way he played a lot of times. But I don't think he was a confrontational, I want to go out and, you know, be loud about this.
I think he helped Kane too.
Kane, absolutely.
Yeah, Kane, like, just have a
Kane
good time and relax
and
have fun.
And that's
fun.
The way Salvi is.
Right.
Salvi and Kane are
Hosmer
like the same
Salvi
kind of,
too.
Yeah.
By doing that.
Those two are the same. They both have the big smiles on their face when they're around each other, and they were best friends. And you can tell why, right?
Sure.
Kane and Salvi, why they loved each other so much, because they're the same type of personality. We're just laid back. We want to play. We want to have success.
Brother from another mother.
Go win. Exactly.
That's what Salvi would say.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's something that Hosmer did that every team like that's having success needs.
Yes.
And he was the guy that you know, fell on the sword sometimes.
He did.
Because of that.
That's what leaders do. And one of the things, too, that the Padres were so interested in when they went and got Eric Hosmer free agency and overpaid for him was they weren't worried about the numbers as much. They had a younger team at that time that was coming up, and they saw Hosmer as a catalyst, a leader of younger guys who has a ring on his finger because he won the World Series of Royals in 15. So that was one of the biggest reasons why the Padres got Hosmer and overpaid for him, because they knew his numbers weren't like out of the stratosphere great. They were solid, and he was a good defensive player too, a complete player, but they talked about it. They were talking about leadership, and that's something that helped Hosmer get a lot of money, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. That's important, and it was huge, obviously, during the Royals' run to win a World Series.
Absolutely.
It was awesome.
Always need a guy like that. Never underestimate how important a first baseman is in your relations to other teams. You mentioned, like, when Ventura was acting up sometimes. Sometimes it's that first baseman when the other team's leader gets on first. It's somebody like Eric Hosmer that says, hey, all right, we know something's going on. We'll take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not make this a bigger deal than what we need to. We're on it. Stuff like that. He also was, you know, it sounds dumb, and But, you know, sometimes baseball teams need those little dumb fun things. And I think the media had fun with it, too. He kind of started that 1738 thing. And mm-hmm. it's just something that brings the team together. You know, and he seemed to enjoy Kansas City. He always heard, you know, I had friends that lived in Kansas City at that time. And they every once in a while, he said, oh, we saw Eric Hosmer out and about here, eating here or doing this there. And so
he picked up the tab for a whole bunch of Kansas City. You know?
After the wild card game, he went out and partied. I had a couple friends actually at the bar that night that were getting free drinks from Hosmer and Dyson.
Pretty awesome stuff. So it was great to see Haas back, and the Royals won. So everything works out for the Royals, at least last night. MJ Melendez with his 11th homer, and the big blow last night was Salvador Perez, ironically enough.
Salvi with a blast down the left field line, and that ball hits.
Go, Salvi, go!
He's already jogging around as the third base umpire said it hit the foul pole. Home run, and the Royals have busted it open.
It was a controversial home run. It got Alex Cora ejected after they went to review, and it did not hit the foul pole. It hit the padding near the foul pole, and apparently the ground rules say that's a home run, although I was listening to the Red Sox announcer on the highlight, and he said, nowhere we've got a copy of the ground rules, and nowhere does it say anything about that padding in the ground rules. So, whatever. Now, I will say this. First of all, I thought it was a mute point because he drove in two. It was 6-3. If they called that a ground rule double, Salvi's at second, and he's going to be at second no matter what anyway.
Yeah.
There was nobody out. So, I mean, only thing it really affected was the Royals are up 6-3 or 7-3.
You still blew the game open.
Yes,
there
and right.
Probably finished it.
Right, yeah. So Salvi with the big hit, and here's Mike Matheny on his catcher's big home run.
Yeah, he says he's really fresh and looked like it today. That ball was smashed. That's one of the hardest hit balls you're going to see. That's just a real nice job of, you know, kind of taking what they're giving us right there. Nicky being able to get on base a couple times via walk and putting pressure on the base paths, guys all day long, just pressure. And then you never know how that influences the kind of pitches the guys behind you are going to get. And then Sal gets in there, an opportunity to do damage, and that's what he does. Salvi called homer, so I believed him.
Salvi comes through his fourth home run since coming off the IL. Despite missing a lot of games this year, he has 15 home runs. Chris Bubich, 2 runs in 6 innings, got no decision. He has really pitched a lot. I mean, he was horrible earlier in the year, and he maybe has figured something out. We've seen Daniel Lynch have some games where he's been kind of dominant, although he still doesn't get through really 6 innings. Singer has been really good. Last start wasn't as good, but he had to wait and for a rain delay and then come back and take one for the team to preserve the bullpen. So there, and then Keller, honestly, has been much better than his record indicates. And then Greinke's been basically your fourth or fifth starter, giving you 5 innings. So the starting pitching has been better. There's no doubt about it. But if it's for the Royals to get back to 14 and 15, the days of Hosmer and Salvi and Kane and Escobar and Dyson and all that stuff, and getting the playoffs and creating excitement in Kansas City again for Royals baseball, they're going to have really good starting pitching more than likely, or they're going to have a dominant bullpen and decent starting pitching like they did in 14 and 15. And Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, told us that earlier this week. If you missed that interview, it's on our podcast page. Sports Ticket, KDCountry94.com is the website to go to. And as of the last 3 weeks, or four maybe over about a month, the starting pitching has been better. All right, we got a couple more things about the Royals. First of all, the Royals are 42-64. Zach Greinke is on the hill tonight for the Boys in Blue. 3-6, ERA of 4.41. Second of 4 games at the K against the Red Sox. So Whit Merrifield, we got news about him. We'll also discuss the Royals and how they're playing defensive musical chairs, which I'm sure Dusty enjoys immensely. And we've also got a team that hit 7 home runs last night and still lost. Plus, football back, the Hall of Fame game, and we'll give you an update on Chiefs training camp, including a couple of wide receivers, because wide receiver is a focal point with Tyreek Hill no longer on the Chiefs roster. So we'll hit that all in just a moment. But first, local sports with Dusty.
Yeah, we have one more event this week for Blood Athlete at the AAU Junior Olympics in Greensboro, North Carolina. Mika Jordan will be competing in the 8 and under girls turbo javelin. Earlier this week, she had a 22nd place national finish in the shot put. Griffin Johnson, a boy, competed in 2 events this week after an 8th place finish in the discus. He took home a 2nd place silver medal in the shot put with a throw of 43 feet 8 inches. Great meet there and week for Griffin Johnson there, Beloit. You can find the full results and live info, live results, everything you need to know about the AAU Junior Olympics. There's a link at nckssports.com.
All right, I don't want to forget about it. Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot. Sporting the Creighton Blue Jay shirt.
Yes. Brought to you by the Blues Brothers. I know we've had them before, but there's 2 of them.
Blues Brothers. We're all wearing blue today.
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of
like
well, we are.
Blues Brothers is the right
Hosmer
sponsor.
Being back in the K. We didn't even coordinate this or send out a company memo.
There's 2 of the Blues Brothers, and they have the blues, just like the Cubs fans. Lost a doubleheader in the Harry Caray Invitational. Mm-hmm. 2 games against St. Louis. Lost them both.
Even worse, against the Cardinals.
Yes.
Darn.
So... Back to under the Royals record.
Oh, the Royals are better than the Cubs. Yep. That's all we care about here at the radio station. We talk about it all the time. All right, let's talk some Royals baseball. Whit Merrifield was traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. Everybody knows that by now, unless you live underneath a rock. Yesterday was reported by somebody that covers the Blue Jays on Twitter. Whit Merrifield tells us that he has been vaccinated and will be in Toronto when the Blue Jays are. And my response on Twitter... was, so in other words, the research changed. Or, as my friend Cody says, research is better in Canada, apparently.
Yeah, the science is different up there.
The science is different in Canada. Listen, hopefully it's the last time we talk about Whit in this situation. Next time we talk about Whit, hopefully he's doing great things for the Blue Jays. I wish no ill will on the guy. I think he's a good dude. I think he works extremely hard. I think he gets the most out of his abilities. He was a late bloomer. He won a championship in college. He's a winner, even though he hasn't been a winner in the big leagues. That's not his fault. He's an all-star a couple times, led the league in hits a couple times, stolen bases. I mean, he's been a solid defender, even though he's been jerked around a lot of different positions, but that shows how good he is. He's multidimensional, versatile. Listen, he's had a really solid career, no doubt. I don't know if he'll be in the Royals Hall of Fame at some point, possibly. I don't know. He's not part of any winning season, so that's going to be held against him probably. But it's no fault of his own. And having said all that, I'm still irked by this. And because, and I go back to it, I'm not irked. I understand where he's coming from when he says, you know, that he'd get vaccinated for a winner. I mean, that's what he said. Let's just clean it up as clean as we can. I mean, he said he'd consider getting, I might get vaccinated if I was a postseason contender on a team. It's simple. You can clean it up, paraphrase it all you want. What he's saying is, I'm not going to get vaccinated if we don't have a chance to go to the postseason. I am if I think I'm part of a team that's going to the postseason. Now, he later on said, of course, I used the wrong phrasing of words. Postseason is very important to me. I've never been to the postseason with the Royals. And, of course, I hope it happens with the Royals. And if the Royals are in the postseason, he basically is saying, yeah, I'd get vaccinated. Yeah, well, of course, the Royals are bad at the time when they go to Toronto. The Royals knew this all along, that him and 9 other players were not vaccinated. I have no problem with him not getting vaccinated. I have no problem with him. I have no problem with him getting vaccinated now. I have no problem with him saying I might get vaccinated if I'm part of a winning team. Listen, I'm with you, Whit, because the Royals have sucked since the end of 2016 when they kind of finally blew it up. I mean, the Royals have been really not that good. They were 500 or right close to 500 a year after they won the World Series. They were 80-82. I think they had a chance to go 81-81, lost the last game. They haven't had a winning season since. They haven't even been that close except that one year. And so he's absolutely right. Royals fans could be offended by him saying, listen, you know, I'll get the vaccination. I'll consider getting vaccination if my team has a chance to make the playoffs. I have no problem with that. Now, Royals fans have a major problem with that. I don't have as big a problem with that at all. My bigger problem is the other party said. If you're going to sit here and you're going to tell me, well, you know, according to the research that I've done, and I've talked to people, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, then so what drastically changed with your research in the last 2 weeks? And the only thing that's changed is, in order for you to get paid, you need to go get vaccinated to play for the Blue Jays every day. Otherwise, you're just doing the road games. So while he lost a little bit of money by missing four games against the Blue Jays in Toronto, it wasn't a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it gave him 8 days off because of the All-Star break. And he was banged up anyway, although I think his plan all along was to be unvaccinated, so he would have missed if he was healthy, which would have been funny and interesting and ironic if his 553-game consecutive streak would have ended because he chose not to take a shot, which, once again, I have no problem with him taking it or not taking it. My problem with Merrifield is you didn't stand by your convictions. This is going to really sound crazy, and Royals fans may not agree with me, and I'm sure they won't. But I'm going to tell you, man to man, person to person, I have more respect, and this is just with this decision, okay? The overall person, I probably would like Whit Merrifield better, okay? The overall team player, I think I would like Whit Merrifield better. But when it comes to this one in particular topic, and that is whether or not to get vaccinated, yes or no, I respect Kyrie Irving a hell of a lot more than Whit Merrifield. Because at least Kyrie Irving has stuck to his guns. Mm-hmm. I respect Novak Djokovic a lot more than Whit Merrifield when it comes to this topic. Because he stuck to his guns. He just pulled out of a tournament because of the COVID vaccine again. He's giving up the chance to make history. Novak is giving up the chance to be the all-time winner in majors. He's agreeing not to play because he does not want to get the vaccine, which is his right. He has been steadfast. He has been consistent. He's done his whatever research. He don't wiffle waffle around. Neither is Kyrie Irving. Those guys at least stuck to their guns. Now, you could argue, Kyrie, is he really a great team player? Because that really helped blow up their season last year. I would argue Harden helped blow it up too, blah, blah, blah. I get your point. But what I'm trying to say is just focus on this one in particular issue. That is, do you or do you not get vaccinated? Listen, if I've got people I know that will not get vaccinated, I don't hate them for it. I've got people that get vaccinated. That's fine, too. But if you're going to sit here and tell me, now, if you could come back, if Whit Merrifield could come right back and say, well, actually, I talked to a couple of doctors and specialists in Canada, as Cody says, the research better in Canada, and they convinced me this is the way to go. Now, I know, Whit could be lying through his teeth just to make himself look better, but at least I would hear that. We all know what's happened here. This is not hard to decipher and figure out. It isn't rocket science or brain surgery, all right? He was going to lose a lot of money if he didn't get vaccinated once he got traded to the Blue Jays. Now, I don't know if this is part of the Royals' thinking. I would doubt it, but I think it is the cherry on top. Because there are some Royals people in their organization that were irked and pissed when Whit Merrifield said what he said. They were not happy. And I get it. He kind of threw the organization under the bus by saying what he said. And I get why he said it, because he was frustrated all these years. So I don't blame him for that. But I understand the other side, the organization being upset with Whit for saying those things, especially when he's considered a leader. And he was he's the representative for the Royals. Okay, when they go talk with meetings, player association, all this. So you trust a guy when you put him in that position. But I think the little tiny cherry on top for the Royals was, listen, you know, if we trade him to anywhere besides Toronto, he may not get vaccinated. We'll never know if he really would or wouldn't. But we trade him to Toronto, which we got a couple guys. We like it. Hey, you know what? Hey, Dayton, Jay, I don't think Dayton's this spiteful, but, you know, J.J. Piccolo would be like, hey, Dayton, dude. I mean, of course, Dayton's probably already doing this stuff himself anyway. But, hey, these offers are even. Yeah, we like both evenly. Boy, it'd be kind of cool to see if he actually gets vaccinated or not. Let's send him to Toronto. Because anywhere else he went, he would have got paid his full salary, except if that team happened to go to Toronto and he sat out a series like he did with the Royals. Instead, when you go to Toronto, he's got to make a decision. He either got to play the Kyrie Irving card and play away games only, or he's got to get vaccinated. And so that's the thing. If Whit Merrifield never said anything about the research, if he would have, honestly, if Whit Merrifield would have just said really nothing, because that's what the rest of the Royals did. And Whit Merrifield said the day or two after he made his comments, he said, listen, I talk too much. I get in trouble. My wife even tells me that. Well, you're right, Whit. You did say too much. You're absolutely right. And just because you have a house in Kansas City, yeah, that's great. You love Kansas City. But if you could get paid twice as much money to go somewhere else, you would leave and you would sell your house in Kansas City. Or maybe you'd come back and keep it. So lots of players that live in their city for years and playing in the league for 4 or 5 years or even a couple years, you know, they have a house in their town. So he kept saying that. And I was like, dude, you think you're special? There's lots of people that have houses in Kansas City that are athletes, for crying out loud, that have been there less and not as long as you. So I get the frustration from Witt. I get why he said what he said, and he wants to win. And yeah, I would probably or consider or might get the vaccine if I'm part of a contender. It is a shot at the Royals organization, but you know what? If the Royals don't like it, my feeling is get better. And Witt doesn't like it, then force yourself out, which I think he basically did. But don't give me this baloney about your research and all this, and then, boom, you're traded. And he got $1.5 million on the line. Oh, well, my research says I better get this shot so I get paid, because that's exactly what it looks like. So what I'm saying is hold true to your convictions. And if you aren't strong with your convictions, then why'd you even bring that part up in the first place?
Yeah, we don't have to skirt around it. That's no. Not what it looks like. That's what it is.
No, yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, the guy said what he said, yes, and made it easy to know that this is what it, yes, is, right?
Which some, like, people would say that's refreshing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to beat around the bush.
So let's say he didn't say that, mm-hmm, and he goes and he's not vaccinated, kind of like Andrew Benintendi, right? You know, just add him to the list of people that aren't vaccinated. But he didn't talk about anything. He just sat out, didn't play the games, and now he does get traded to Toronto, but we don't know his feelings about the vaccine,
right,
yet. And now all of a sudden he gets traded to Toronto, and he says, oh, I'm going to get vaccinated so I can play in Toronto. Well, then we would know now, too,
right,
and but the blow-up would be right today,
right,
because he's now announced yesterday that he's going to get the vaccine or has gotten the vaccine,
right,
or somebody from the Blue Jays media has announced that for,
sure,
him, and so we'd be blowing up right now about this conversation, like on this show today we would be having a long conversation about Witt and what, like, why did he not get the vaccine,
sure,
at the Royals, this,
but we wouldn't have as much ammunition,
yeah, exactly, but we'd be blowing up right now because we'd be pissed today, right? Like, mm-hmm, why is he getting the vaccine now, and, mm-hmm, now he would have told us without telling us that he's getting,
but that's exactly what Andrew Benintendi's done.
Yeah.
And did we have a big boo-ha-ha about Andrew Benintendi making a big deal about him getting traded to the Yankees and then getting vaccinated according to sources he's going to? We didn't.
No.
It wasn't even a story. He wasn't vaccinated. He's the,
yeah,
all-star on the Royals. He went to the Yankees. We're not, and they're going to possibly have to play in Toronto. We didn't even talk about it. Their difference is Witt came out and said what he said.
It, yeah.
Andrew Benintendi was smart and didn't say anything. And the other part of the equation is Benintendi isn't a career Royal, whereas
Witt
is. Witt's
one of our own.
Right.
And
that's why
I think
makes
people
it harder.
Would be mad today. They'd be talking about it way more than what Benintendi. Benintendi was there for a
right.
season and a half.
That's my point I'm trying to make.
Yeah. And so Witt would, I mean, we'd still be mad at,
sure,
Witt. And we'd be wondering and asking and being like, why?
Because we feel scorned by the people we love.
Yeah.
And we love
and
Witt.
Then maybe we would have our conspiracy theory of the fact that he was not hurt
right
today instead of that day, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah. Looks better to end your streak on an injury than not getting a shot.
Right. True.
So we'd have those conversations maybe today. You know?
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know if I would go, but I don't think people would go that far back to think about that.
No, I don't either.
And I think that would have benefited Witt in the conversation we'd have today.
Would it be a story today? Yes. Would we be as mad about it? I don't think
so. No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't be as close to the same kind of anger that some Royals fans have.
Everybody knows that Canada's just better with everything they do, and apparently the research and science is better there too, I guess. I mean, wait till Kyrie and Novak go to Canada and they'll get suddenly vaccinated, and then we got a story. Let's shift now. Now, Whit Merrifield is no longer part of the Royals, as we know. Jason and I touched upon this a little bit while Dusty was gone, but I went ahead and went a little bit deeper into this, and I know Dusty just absolutely loves this. And Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, said earlier this week that the Royals are trying to move some pieces around, so you know they don't want Vinny Pascatino to be DH every day. They want him to play the field. Well, the only position he can play is first base, basically. So Tuesday night, pay very close attention, ladies and gentlemen, to the lineup I give you. Then I'm going to give you the lineup for Wednesday, which we touched upon yesterday. And I'll give you the lineup for last night. You ready? So on Tuesday, this was the Royals starting, and I'm talking defense, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In left field was Kyle Isabel. In center field was Michael Taylor. In right field was MJ Melendez. Third base was Hunter Dozier. Shortstop was Bobby Witt Jr. Second base was Nicky Lopez. First baseman Nick Prado. Catcher, Salvador Perez, DH, Vinny Pascatino. Michael Massey had not been called up yet or wasn't with the team yet on Tuesday. Royals lose 9-2. I have no problem with that lineup at all. I'm okay with it. Salvi wants to catch. Pascatino's bats in the lineup. Prado's a future first baseman. Witt Jr.'s at the he's the shortstop of the future. He's at short. Dozier goes back to the position he's most accustomed to playing when he came up with the Royals at third. The iffy one would be Melendez in right, but you know, if you want him in the lineup and Salvi's catching, that's probably where we got to put him. I have no problem with that lineup. Do you have a major problem with it?
No.
Okay.
The same thing you said.
Okay.
I'm still not an MJ Melendez right field guy.
I know. But where else do you put him?
If you want him to play, I'm with you right now.
Okay. Now I think is where it's going to get interesting. So Wednesday, a day later, 24 hours later, all right, actually it wasn't even 24 hours later because they played afternoon game. Here was the Royals' defensive lineup. Are you ready for this? Jason, we went through this yesterday, but we're going to go one step further to last night. In left field was Nick Prado. In center field was Michael Taylor. In right field was Kyle Isabel. At third base was Bobby Witt Jr. At shortstop was Nicky Lopez. At second base was Michael Massey. They called him up. First base is Vinny Pascatino. The catcher was MJ Melendez. And the DH is Salvador Perez. And the odd man out was Hunter Dozier. Eight of the nine. Actually, wasn't it 9 out of 10?
Yeah, if you had
9 out of 10, you had the DH. Yeah. 9 out of the 10 positions, if you count the DH, were completely different than less than 24 hours before. You talk about defensive musical chairs, it's like the, all right, song ended. Everybody rotate a chair. Woo, yeah. Witt Jr. like, I get to play third this next round. Lopez like, I'll go to short. Hey, Vinny, come off the bench. You're the first baseman. You're not the DH tonight. Salvi, you rotate the DH. MJ, rotate right field. It's like practice stations we do with little kids.
Volleyball side out.
Let me repeat the lineup on Wednesday. Nick Prado, your future first baseman, was in left. Michael Taylor in center. Kyle Isabel played left on Tuesday, played right on Wednesday. Bobby Witt Jr., who is your shortstop of the future, or so I thought, is playing third base on Wednesday and last night. Nicky Lopez is playing short Wednesday and last night. Second base was Massey the last two nights. They want to get a look at him. I get that. And your first baseman, the last three games, you've had three different first basemen. Nick Prado on Tuesday, Vinny Pascatino Wednesday, Hunter Dozier playing first on Thursday last night. Your catcher was Salvi, then MJ, then Salvi last night. Your DH was Pascatino, then Salvi, then Pascatino. I have no problem with the DH part. Do you know of many? I haven't tracked it. There's so many stat geeks and nerds out there. I would like to know the last Major League Baseball team or anybody else that's done this, where they've changed, let's just forget the DH for a second, 8 of the 9 defensive positions. You know the pitchers automatically change it. Mm-hmm. 8 of the 9 defensive positions in less than 24 hours. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I'm sure there's four or five changes. Follow, right?
Right. Like,
so
I'm sure there's teams that go 4 or 5 changes sometimes, injuries, yeah. A shuffle. But, I mean, there's no injuries here. They basically reshuffled the whole lineup to get Michael Massey to play second.
For a trade. Did you go through last night's yet?
So last night, outfield. Oh, yeah. Well, let's just go one step at a time here. So Tuesday, I gave you the lineup. Yeah. You said you're cool with it.
Yeah.
All right. You don't like MJ and Wright, but it's okay. Wednesday, how do you like that lineup? Prado in left, Taylor at center, Isabel in right, Bobby Witt Jr. moves to third, Lopez moves to short, Massey's at second, so you get a look at him because that's his position. First base, Pascatino, Perez is the DH, Melendez the catcher, Dozier's out. What stands out to you? What do you not like?
Like Nick Prado playing left field.
I don't either.
I hate that.
I hate that as well.
As much as I hate MJ Melendez playing right field.
Right.
But here's the thing.
I don't like Bobby Witt Jr. playing third either.
And I'm going to expand upon that because the thing that I don't understand about that is we have, for God's sake, I hope we have identified him as our future shortstop, right?
I would hope.
Like, he's been playing that position most
all
of the year. And so, you know, he's moved around a couple times when Witt was still on the team.
Sure.
But what's wild to me when what I don't understand about that part is on Tuesday, before Witt was traded, Nicky Lopez was going to start at third.
Yes.
Why the hell is he not starting at third then? If you were going to start him at third the day Witt got
Merrifield
traded.
Was, right. Then why isn't
and then they moved him to second because Witt got traded, yeah. And they moved things up on Tuesday to the lineup.
Yeah. Leave Bobby Witt Jr. alone.
Leave Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop because that's what he was going to play.
I agree.
He was going to be back in the lineup Tuesday.
I agree.
on defense instead of playing DH to get himself back into the flow of things.
That's my biggest
argument.
And it's
like, why are you moving
your
Nicky
shortstop?
If Nicky can play third and you were going to put him in the lineup there, put him at third.
Yeah.
I don't care about Dozier. If he's not playing, he's not playing.
Right.
But Nicky, put him at third. If you want Massey, if all he does is play second base, fine.
Yeah.
Put Nicky Lopez at third.
I got you.
Don't move your shortstop to third and then move Nicky to shortstop. I get Nicky played shortstop at times, too. But if you've had
last
him in
year
the
played
lineup,
a lot. And yeah. Played gold glove caliber. Yeah. But Bobby Witt Jr. can, too, obviously.
Yeah. But if you've had him in the lineup at third and Bobby's been playing short all
right.
year, there's no sense in moving Bobby Witt to third and playing Nicky at short. This is what I don't like about all
I
this.
I don't
it's
like it
you,
either.
You're trying to find spots for people because you have a log jam, and now then you're screwing everything else up when you don't need to be. Like, you actually have positions for these guys.
Yes.
And you're finding different positions for them to play.
Well, to me, it comes down to you want Lopez and Massey in the lineup at the same time. And the thing that really blows me away about this equation is, listen, I would entertain that you know, Nicky can only play second or short. Bobby Witt Jr. could play third or short. I would be cool with that. I could actually live with it. I don't love it, but I could live with it. What blows me away is if you had Nicky Lopez already playing third and you trust him play third and he's played third multiple times this year, now why all of a sudden are you jerking with Bobby Witt Jr., who is the face and the star of this franchise for years to come? That's the last guy. Like, it should be automatic. Mike Matheny can screw up as much as he wants, but there's one thing he shouldn't have to be even messing with. Every single day, as long as Bobby Witt Jr. is healthy, automatically Bobby Witt Jr. has shortstop written to the next. He has the number 6 next to his name in the lineup card. That should be automatic. He shouldn't be in any other position. That is your guy. There's no need to move and jerk him around. Now, like I said, if Lopez and Massey and Witt Jr., you all want in the lineup at the same time, and Lopez can't play third, I at least get it. But Lopez, clearly you trust him enough to play third before, like Dusty established, so what changed last night? What changed the last two nights? I will say this, Bobby Witt Jr. has the stronger arm than Nicky Lopez,
sure.
And usually you want your strong arm at third, okay? Short and third. Your two stronger arms, short and third. I do get that part. And the next question is, Dozier's the better bat than Lopez and more power, so why? How about Lopez sit on the bench? Now, Lopez worked a walk last night. I think he's a manager favorite. He does the little things to help this team, and I get it. I have no problem with Nicky Lopez being in the lineup. But I'm with you, Dusty. I do not need to see Bobby Witt Jr. being moved from short to third. Like, Mondesi got hurt. I know the plan. At the beginning of the year, Bobby Witt Jr. is playing third. Mondesi got hurt. He was shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
But if Bobby Witt Jr. is your shortstop of the future, then there's no need to mess with him. Now, maybe what we're doing is we're misinterpreting this. Perhaps the Royals still think Mondesi is going to come back and be healthy next year, and Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be our third baseman in the future, and we believe Mondesi in a combination of another prospect coming up or Lopez, and we're going to keep Bobby Witt Jr. We're going to make him our third baseman. But if that was the case, then you should have Lopez playing short all year long. You should have Bobby Witt Jr. at third all year long, and Whit Merrifield at second all year long.
Yeah,
so I'm confused as what the plan is here.
You can't justify that part of it. If they feel like Mondesi is going to come back and play short, so they need Bobby at third. Well, then play Nicky at short because he played there
exactly.
All year last year.
Yeah, and have Bobby play third the whole year.
Yeah.
But this goes back to, I don't, once again, like Ryan LaFever said this week, the Royals know what they're doing more than any of us, including broadcasters. And yes, he's more than likely right. But they know so much that they had Brady Singer in the bullpen to start this year. And then Dayton Moore says one of the dumbest things Dayton Moore has ever said since he's been a Royals general manager, and now he's the president about whatever his title is. He's still running the team. By the way, Ryan never mentioned J.J. Piccolo one time when we were talking about moves and everything. Dayton Moore is pulling strings. He's a de facto GM, all right? J.J. Piccolo is the title GM. He's still doing the same stuff. They just gave him a nice title, and they changed Dayton's title.
J.J. got a pay raise.
Yes, Dayton's the spokesperson
and
everything else. That's right. So Dayton Moore, one of the dumbest things he ever said, and Dayton Moore's a great person. We've met him. He's a nice guy. He's very religious. He sticks to his convictions, and I do think a lot of Dayton Moore, and I'll never hate the guy. I don't try to hate anybody, but I don't dislike the guy at all. I mean, he brought a World Series championship to Kansas City. He did what I didn't think anybody could do in the dynamics of baseball. No way did I think the Royals could do what they did, and they went to the World Series back-to-back years. But when he said, when all of a sudden Brady Singer was in the bullpen to start the year, and Chris Bubich was in the rotation, and then all of a sudden they pulled him from the bullpen and sent him to the minors, and they said, why are you sending the minors? They go, well, we got to lengthen him out because he's too talented for the bullpen. What? You clearly look like an idiot right now because he's doing great. And he should have been in the rotation to start the year. And if he wasn't, he should have been the minors, continuing to be a starter. And this goes to the jerking around of players. There was no need for Brady Singer to be in the bullpen.
No.
Okay? Unless you gave up on him to develop the third pitch.
Yeah.
And if you gave up on him to do the third pitch, then you just leave him in the bullpen and let him figure out his reliever role like every other failed starter does. But instead, Bubich was so god-awful, Hernandez couldn't throw strikes, and all of a sudden, like, whoa, he's too talented to be in the bullpen now. And now he's a starter, and he's their best starter. So the Royals don't even know what they have. All right? They knew when they drafted him. Dayton Moore said it on radio interviews. He doesn't have a third pitch. But they still drafted him anyway. Well, then it's your job as an organization to develop and make him throw that third pitch. Well, now finally he's figuring it out, which is great. But you didn't even give him a chance to try to figure it out because you thought he wasn't going to be able to, apparently, and you put him in the bullpen with two pitches. So when people say, well, the Royals know their players better than anybody else, I don't think they knew Brady Singer that well.
Mm-hmm.
So and Prado and left is a joke to me. And that's the logjam at first. Pascatino, we don't want to be DH all the time.
I mean, I know why he was moved to a different position if you want his bat in the lineup.
You want his bat in the lineup. Now let's go to last night's lineup. You said about last night's lineup. Left field, okay, you're going to love this. So left field last night was MJ Melendez. So now you don't like him in right. Now he's playing left. And center was Taylor. Taylor's the only consistent guy, and you could argue he should be traded and Waters should be up. But anyway, Taylor is the only consistency. He's center field. Right field was Nate Eaton. They just called him up. So Nate Eaton's right field. So you had three different right fielders in three games, three different first basemen in three games, and you had three different left fielders the last three games. Okay, you with me?
Yeah.
At third base, Bobby Witt Jr., shortstop, Nicky Lopez. Second base, Michael Massey. First base, Hunter Dozier. Catcher, Salvi. DH, Pascatino. Why is Dozier playing first? Nick Prado was out last night. Now, I'm sure it's a matchup against the pitcher, and we want Dozier's right-handed bat instead of Prado's left-handed bat. And I'm sorry, we're wasting service time if we're putting Prado on the bench and we're having Dozier play first. If you want Dozier and Prado both in the lineup, I'm cool with it. Dozier don't play first. But in this case, it looks like it came down to, well, it's either Dozier or Prado at first. We're going to go with Dozier because Dozier sat out Wednesday. That sounds like peewee baseball. We rotate. Well, we've got to make sure it's defensive musical chairs. Nick Prado, if he's healthy, should play every day. And this is simple. First base or DH for Prado, period. And it should be 9 out of 10 first base. He is your future first baseman. If you think Vinny Pascatino is your first-year first baseman, then you got to sell me on that idea. Ryan Lefever said, the play-by-play voice of the Royals earlier this week on Tuesday, that Nick Prado was the first name he mentioned with the young guys before Bobby Witt Jr. And he's been compared to Hosmer, but maybe even a better hitter. He says his younger group is more talented than that young group we talked about that came up in the 14-15 season led into the World Series title. But that group of young guys had tremendous drive and motivation. We'll find out about these guys.
They
well, it's hard. It's hard.
Kind of
it's hard to have this great motivation and drive when your manager doesn't play you every day. So if Prado is ready and he's up here, then he plays. There should be two simple positions of all the positions the Royals do, and they play right now. I don't care who's the pitcher is. Your shortstop is Bobby Witt Jr. Your first baseman is Nick Prado. And then you work it from there. And I could argue MJ Melendez should be your catcher. Salvi's your DH, and those four spots are done. Taylor's in center. Now I got five. And then if you want to see Massey, I'm locked in stone at second with him. Okay? And then Lopez, guess what? Lopez and Dozier rotate at third or something, to be fair. I don't care. Because Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado, and MJ Melendez are the three key faces of the future of this franchise, at least when it comes to bats and in the field everyday players. And you are jerking every one of them around. Bobby Witt Jr. from short to third the last two games. Nick Prado's playing left field of all places. MJ Melendez is playing right field, catcher, then left field. He played three different positions in 3 days. Now, you may sit there and listen to this and go, you guys are making a big deal out of nothing. These guys are smart. You can move them around. Let me tell you something. When you play baseball, there are so many intricacies in the game, no matter if you play different outfield spots, let alone if you play catcher or first base to left field, two completely different positions. Completely different. But he might get away with it because kids are smart enough or athletic enough in peewee baseball or high school baseball. But guess what? In the pros, the margin for error is slim to none. These Alex Gordon, do you think it's an accident he became a multi-gold glove winner?
No. I mean,
do you think Alex Gordon would turn into the great defensive player he ended up being had the Royals moved him from third to first to left to right and DH?
No.
Did Alex Gordon play any other position once he went from third to outfield? I think he played first a little bit. I don't remember him playing much in right. It might have been a few games. But the fact is, you pretty much knew when you penciled in the lineup, if Gordon's healthy, where is he going to be?
Left field.
George Brett in the day, it was third base. You didn't have to think about it. Frank White didn't get jerked around. He was your second baseman. I know that's going back a ways. But the bottom line is, if these are... First of all, I have all kinds of problems with this. One, I have a problem with Bobby Witt Jr. being moved from short to third, as we've established. Two, I don't like MJ Melendez. If you're going to play him in right field, okay, that's fine. We think it's a stretch already. Now you're moving him to left field, too? Okay, but the one that blows me away the most is the last three games, your first baseman of the future, the last three games, played first the first game, left field the second, wasn't even in the lineup last night. Why is he here? Put him back in the minors and let him play first base all the time, and let's just preserve the service time. And I'll give Dayton credit. According to Ryan LaFever, Dayton says, we're not going to manipulate service time. If you're ready, you're ready, you're up here. Well, if you're ready, you're ready, you're up here, and you're healthy, and you're not in the lineup, what's the point? Nick Prado last night, not in the lineup. So you're choosing Nicky Lopez and Hunter Dozier being in the lineup over Nick Prado. That's what it comes down to. Or Michael Massey.
Yeah.
Even Vinny Pascatino. Prado could have been the DH. Vinny's a left-handed bat, by the way. Why? If you're worried about the left-handed bat situation, right? Like, if Dozier was in because he's a right-handed bat and Prado's a left-handed bat, why wouldn't you put Dozier as your designated hitter and then have Prado be your first baseman and Pascatino sits?
Yeah. I foresee like a major issue with Vinny Pascantino for a while. Because he's not...
He doesn't have flexibility.
Apparently, that's the only actual position he can play is first base.
And
we sit here and talk, and it's like, we don't want these guys to be DH if they can be in the field. Well, at some point, one of these guys is going to have to play DH. Until somebody gets injured, right? Like, if Prado has an injury, then, yeah, we can slide Vinny right into first base, right? And so you have that backup, like we talked about the other day. You do, like, a little bit of a log jam so you can have other guys going. But we're talking about guys here that need to be in the lineup every day for you to have success offensively. Like, Pascantino is a guy that you want in your lineup if he figures all that out at the major league level, because he's got power and can drive runs in for you. And he's patient, too, right? And that's the thing you like about a lot of these younger guys for the Royals. They're patient at the plate, which is something that the older Royals that we've been watching have not had. And, you know, half and half. You know, some of them aren't patient. MJ's not real patient at the plate. But, yeah, you know, there's some of those things where there's two holdups on this team right now. It's Vinny because he's one-dimensional defensively, and it's Salvi because we don't know what his thought is. What does he want to do? Can we put him at DH, please, and just let him DH at his age? But he's not going to agree to that because he wants to catch, right?
He's a gold glove catcher.
He's a Royals Hall of Famer. He's the one of the best players the Royals have ever had on their team, and so now I need to tell him what to do. And you don't want to tell him what to do because you want him to be able to do what he wants, but at some point,
kind of like not resting Whit Merrifield when he needs a break because he has a streak.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're letting this veteran tell you what you're going to do with your lineup.
Salvador Perez's situation does affect the entire lineup.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it, because obviously Pascatino's the wild card. Like, if you had Pascatino back in the minors, does that solve a few things? Yeah, it does help. But it's still an issue because Salvi wants to catch. So then that means that Dozier and Prado could be in lineup every day because one of them can be DH/first base, third base, whatever. I still think this comes down to they really value Nicky Lopez. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, because he does some of the small things. But you look at the last two games in particular, the last three games, Massey wasn't called up yet, so Lopez is in the lineup. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But the last two games, instead of Dozier, who's a better, more power, the better bat than Lopez, Dozier's the one sitting, Lopez playing short, which moves Witt Jr. to third. And last night, Lopez is at short, and Prado's out. You could easily have Dozier at third, Witt Jr. back at short, Massey at second, Lopez the guy out. So why is Lopez in every single day? And Prado is not only is he not playing first, he's not even hitting her in the lineup. And if you're going to argue with me, and I understand, well, Prado's a left-handed bat, Dozier's a right-handed bat. Well, then why is Vinny Pascatino the DH? He's a left-handed bat. Why isn't Pascatino sitting? Because Pascatino's been in the lineup the last three games. Why, isn't it Prado's turn to be in and Pascatino be out? Oh, wait a minute. That's today's lineup. I'm sorry. My bad. Tonight, the Royals will have their fourth different first baseman and fourth different designated hitter, their fourth different left fielder, and their fourth different right fielder in four games. I kid you not. Let me repeat this one more time before we move on. The last three games, the Royals have had three different left fielders, three different right fielders, three different first basemen, three different DHs, and three different guys sitting out.
Yeah.
It is musical chairs.
Yeah. It's just wild to think to me moving forward. If Salvi wasn't part of this, you could solve every problem.
You really would. It'd be
MJ's
simple.
MJ's catcher, Pascantino's DH.
Prado's first. Yep.
And who?
And then Dozier's and Wright.
Eaton and Wright. Dozier and Wright.
Yeah.
If you want Hunter to keep playing too.
Right. Yep. That would be the way to do it. But that means Bobby Witt Jr. plays third then. Lopez plays short. Massey plays second. That would be what you'd have to do.
You wouldn't have to do that, but
well, if based on those guys,
I don't know why they're doing. What I'm saying is, Nicky could play third, Bobby Witt could play short.
Well, they could, but I mean, I just don't think Bobby Witt Jr. has played more third than Nicky Lopez has in his career. That's true, and he's playing all third, playing a lot of third in the minors at times too, between third and short. But I digress. I think it's alarming when I saw that. And when I look at this, I'm like, wait a minute, that guy moved here. Like, why is Kyle Isabel going from left to right field? Oh, yeah, we need to figure out Prado in left. Okay, whatever. Moving on. Last night, the Angels got two of the best players in all of baseball. One that's hurt, though. And another guy's really good.
Well, that is absolutely crossed towards left center field. Courtesy look. And he's gone! Homer for Shohei Ohtani, his 23rd. Halo's on the board. 1-0.
That was the first of seven solo home runs. That's the key here. Seven runs on seven swings. Ohtani hit two homers. The Angels hit seven home runs last night against the worst team in the American League, the Oakland Athletics, and the Angels lost. Let that sink in. Hey, guys, we hit a lot of home runs. We're going to win. Not so fast. Seven home runs, but they're all solos, and the Angels lost 8-7. It has happened before, though. The White Sox hit seven and lost a game in 16. But the Angels are the first team to ever hit seven solo homers and have no other runs in a game. They didn't manufacture one. It wasn't a two-run homer. That was it. Well, Angel fans just got to be loving that, aren't they? That's funny. Chiefs training camp update. Defensive end Carlos Dunlap took the field for his first practice with the team. He has 96 career sacks picked up in free agency here recently. He said when he talked to media yesterday, the goal is always to average eight sacks a year, to get at least eight a year. He says, I'm not just a third down pass specialist. First down and second down just as important to me. So we'll see how that works. But I think it's a total makes sense move by the Chiefs. His actual salary against the cap is like 1.5, I think, because it's a lot of incentive based, which is perfect. Wide receiver Mecole Hardman. This is a big year for Mecole Hardman. He can get a payday. After this year, he can get a payday, all right? And he said he's going to step it up. And some people didn't see what he really could do because Tyreek was there. And he said, I love Tyreek. I learned a lot from Tyreek. He had a great practice yesterday, which they need Holdren to step up. Now, Scantling, who they picked up from the Packers, he has a tendency for drops. And yesterday he had a couple of drops in practice that would have been big plays. He did haul in a deep throw from Mahomes on another. So that's something to keep an eye on. Odds are this year Chiefs fans are going to be screaming in a key third down situation when Scantling drops one. Mark my words. That'll happen. Of course, Tyreek Hill dropped more than people think too last year. Tyreek Hill, my son always said this. My son played wide receiver when he was younger, and his freshman year in high school, he played some receiver slash running back. And he said, Dad, Tyreek Hill, everybody talks about how great a receiver is. He goes, he doesn't catch the ball properly. He never catches it in front of him. Mm-hmm. He lets it come into his chest. Well, how many times did you see him ricochet off Tyreek and be an interception? So Tyreek is, everybody talking about, well, why isn't Tyreek considered the best receiver in the league? Well, that's one of the reasons why not.
And part of that, I think, is physical with him, too. His hands aren't as big as a lot of receivers, too. And I think that became a crutch for him a little bit, maybe letting that thing come in instead of getting the hands
out.
And
remember, he hasn't played wide receiver his whole life, too. So he maybe, obviously, the curve has been pretty good. And the speed makes up for some of that, obviously. The Chiefs enjoyed a day off from practice today. They will return to the field tomorrow for a padded practice. Chiefs preseason opener next Saturday, August 13th at noon. Pregame 11 o'clock at home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas City, 96.3 The Lake. Football NFL season began last night. Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio.
From the 8-yard line, it is a toss to Amir Abdullah. Speed to the edge. And the season's first touchdown. Raiders offense looks just fine here in the first quarter and change.
The former Nebraska Cornhusker running back, Amir Abdullah, with the first TD of the 2022 NFL preseason. Raiders led 20-0 at halftime. Rolled to the victory of the Jaguars, 27-11. The Jaguars didn't have a lot of players playing. Trevor Lawrence, their quarterback, was not playing in his second year. And both had new coaches. Doug Peterson, Super Bowl-winning coach with the Eagles, the new head coach of the Jaguars. And Josh McDaniels, who hasn't been head coach for about a decade. He was with the Broncos. Now he's with the Raiders. Of course, he was with the Patriots offensive coordinator after he didn't work out in Denver. He's the head coach of the Raiders. So we'll see his second time around as a head coach if that pays off for Josh McDaniels. But it's funny. I saw the caption on CBS Sports. Raiders look sharp. And I'm like, who cares? It's a Thursday night, first preseason game. Derek Carr didn't play. Davante Adams didn't play. A lot of Raider players didn't play. Some of those guys you watched last night, I know you enjoy football, but you probably didn't even know who they were. And I'm not a big fan of preseason football. I love football, but I don't get excited about preseason. Only thing I do with preseason is I watch the starters the first quarter. I might still watch some, but I'm not really engaged. I just want to see, like last year, I wanted to see how the offensive line, that was my whole focus last year, was the offensive line. It was a brand new offensive line. How's that going to fare in preseason? What's Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney going to look like? What's the Niang going to look like? That's all I was worried about last year. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all I was looking at. And defense, what about Nick Bolton? What can he do? This year, what are you keying on? Like, for me, I'm going to key on pass rush.
That's it for me.
And that's about it. And I'm going to...
Well, receivers. What are they going to look like without Tyreek?
That's true.
It's more of a not, I'm not worried about that position. It's more of what will they actually look like with Juju and MVS and what can Mecole Hardman do? And just kind of those things, just to see the continuity and how Mahomes is going to work with guys.
I think I have more reasons to watch preseason this year for the Chiefs because, one, the pass rush, okay? The second thing that I'll be watching very closely is probably the receivers, like you said, what kind of chemistry they're developing with Mahomes. I think the third thing I'm looking at is how are they going to use Ronald Jones and the running back situation. They're deep at running back. They got McKinnon, they got Gore, they got Hilaire, they got Jones, and they like the seventh round draft pick. Kids look pretty good. What, Pacheco?
Yeah, Pacheco.
He's wearing number 10, by the way. Yeah. He looks similar to Tyreek Hill in build a little bit. So running back's interesting because there's going to be at least one or two of those guys that ain't going to make the team. And then the other spot that people kind of overlook, I'm looking at who's the second tight end that can catch the ball because I still think odds are against, and I say this every year, and so far I keep being proven wrong, which I'm happy to be wrong over and over and over. Eventually I'll be right if I stick to my guns, and I don't want to be. But eventually Travis Kelce is going to get nicked up. And you don't have no Tyreek Hill anymore, and if Kelce's out of lineup, you better have a tight end that can make a few plays. I'm not saying a ton, but at least make a couple. Is that Noah Gray? Is that Jody Fortson, who's hurt with a quad injury? I think Fortson's probably not the answer, to be honest with you, on a regular basis. So Noah Gray's
option.
You
want it to be somebody, it needs to be Noah Gray.
It probably has to be Noah
Gray. The Chiefs are wanting him to be that guy. I can guarantee you that.
I agree with you. So that's the things that I'm looking at. And we'll talk more about Chiefs preseason. You guys will next week. And next Saturday against the Bears, that's their preseason opener.
Byron Pringle playing for the Bears.
That's right. Yeah, that's the only reason to watch is because there's a K-State guy playing for the Bears. That's absolutely right. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. See if there's anything else new in sports before we let everybody go. Not seeing anything in particular. Anything else we need to add before we go, guys? We cover it all as best I can. Hopefully we did.
I don't see anything. If you can't find anything, I don't have anything.
Yeah. Kentucky and Gonzaga do a home-and-home in college basketball. We mentioned yesterday Paige Bueker's at Connecticut.
Yeah.
Tore ACL. What a shame. What a bummer.
She's had injuries.
Yeah.
That have really derailed an outstanding. She's already an outstanding career, but.
Absolutely. Donovan Mitchell still on the trade block in the NBA, according to various reports. And then, of course, and the reason we haven't covered this or talked about it is because it's all over the national news and there's no need for us to beat it to death. And that's Brittany Griner sentenced to 9.5 years in prison after a Russian drug conviction. Of course, the White House and other people are working behind the scenes to work out some kind of trade to get her or another guy back that they feel have been improperly imprisoned in Russia. So you'll continue to hear that on the national news, I am sure of that. And Novak Djokovic, as I mentioned earlier, withdrew from the Montreal tournament over the COVID vaccine. The next major is the U.S. Open, correct?
Yeah.
And doesn't he have to be vaccinated to participate?
I think he's already said he's not playing it.
Okay. Because I think he had said there
he
was,
said he was going to try. Like he was, he's always on the draw no matter what.
Right.
Or on the entry list.
I think there was a rumbling out there that maybe that they would not require you have to be vaccinated or something to play in the tournament or whether, I don't know. It seemed like there was at least a glimmer of a chance. But
yeah. I think it was last week he found out that they're not going to do that.
It's a bummer for him, I think. You know, but at the same time, people say, "Well, if you wanted to really play, you get the vaccination." So, once again, should be your choice. That's a popular term this week, no doubt. 10:15, our 1083 degrees. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.